So at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, when the Mishnah differentiates between general dinei mamonos, which require three judges, and gzelos v'chavolos, which require three judges, Rashi tries to interpret, and we have to try to understand the Rashi, what is the case of gzelos? And at the end of this Rashi, he mentions a pasuk in Tanakh of Vayigzol Esachanis Miyad HaMitzri, which literally means he stole it. He took it out of his hands. That's your classic gzela. But Rashi says that there are other cases of gzela, which are a little bit less profound, less obvious, and that's kofer v'pikadon, that let's say Reuven deposits something in the possession of Shimon, that's called a pikadon, and Shimon is kofer, he denies it. He says, I never got it from you. And Rashi adds, the misha sholach bo yad, as soon as Shimon uses the object. So let's say, for example, Reuven claims that he gave Shimon a horse to watch the horse. That's called a pikadon. Shimon denies that he got the horse. The very moment that he, Shimon, rides the horse, I'm just giving that as an example, that's called Shaleach Bo Yad. He stretches his arm out to the object and enjoys it. Havi Gazlan. He's already considered a Gazlan. So in a case where Reuven sues Shimon in a court of law, and he claims that, Shimon, you had my horse, and you rode my horse, and you deny that you the whole story, then if witnesses will come and testify on behalf of Reuven, Shimon will have to pay for the horse. If the horse is gone. Again, if the horse is still alive and well, he'll return the horse. But otherwise, he's got to return the value of the horse.
And so even though he rode the horse, he's considered a gosling at that point, right?
Oh, so that's the question that we want to ask. Rashi has a combination of A plus B. Rashi says first and foremost that Shimon denied that he ever received the horse. That's called kofer b'pikad. And then Rashi says the moment that he uses it, that's called shlichus yad, he becomes a gazlan. Well, in truth, he became a gazlan the very moment that he denied that he ever got the horse, because at that moment he's claiming the horse for himself, meaning we don't know where the horse is, but let's say he has the horse. He is stealing the horse because he's denying that he ever got the horse.
I don't understand the order. Because it would seem that if the horse is put in his possession, right, to be the guardian, and it would seem to me that the first step would be he uses the horse, right? And then, when does he do the denial? So he only does the denial either when Reuven comes and claims the horse, or they're in court. So the first thing is is he rides the horse? So that's the basic question. It seems to me he's a god. Is he considered a gazlan at that point, or only when he denies it later on? But you seem to be explaining it according to Rashi, it's reverse order, but it doesn't make sense.
Right. There are two texts, two versions of this Rashi.
Okay.
If you look at Rashi inside, let me read it to you the way the Aruch Laner has it. He has it like that: Kofer b'pikadon o mishashalach bo yad. The Aruch Laner has it as two separate cases, and it's either or. In either of these two cases, he becomes a gazlan. One case is where he's sued in a court of law, Shimon, and he denies that he ever got the pikadon. The second case is where we have Adam to testify that Shimon used the object for himself.
Okay.
But our Gerson Rashi is very strange. Our Gerson Rashi doesn't have the word O. It doesn't say kofer b'pikadon is one case, O, or another case of shalach bo yad, but dim misha shalach bo yad, that he became a gazlan, this kofer b'pikadon, from the moment that he used the object. And here we're going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out this Rashi, because Rashi seems to assume that you need both A and B. You need kofer b'pikadon and shlichus yad. The truth is that the Gemara says in Masechta Bava Kamma, we'll look it up a little bit later, I just want to give you a little bit of an overview of what I touched on last time. The Gemara says in the name of Rav Sheshes, that the moment that the shomer is kofir b'pikadon, he is a gazlan. We don't care one way or the other whether he's sholeach boyad. Not only that, sholeach boyad is a gazlan. The very moment that he takes it and uses it for himself, that's exactly what a gazlan is all about. So why does Rashi combine A plus B in order to generate a gazlan when it's either A or B, whether it's either kofir b'kadon or sholeach boyad? Each one alone would be sufficient to make him into a gazlan. Now again, if you go with the Aruch Laner's gear, so we're in the clear, because then it reads like this, kofir b'kadon, period, O, sholeach boyad. Kofir b'pikadon makes him into a gazlan, or in another scenario, he was sholeach boyad b'pikadon, and that makes him into a gazlan. But our girsa seems to have a piggyback that you have to have both kofir b'pikadon and mishasholeach boyad. Now, Don, you're right that in terms of the sequence, it would make sense that he was sholeach boyad first. So then I read it like this: kofir b'pikadon becomes a gazlan Dimisha Shalach Boyad, because previously he had been Shalach Boyad. But Rashi requires A plus B.
Well, if it's A plus B, then the order doesn't really make any difference.
So again, you know, I'm telling you right up front, it's going to be a while until we can make sense out of this, Rashi. I don't know, I can't promise you. If by 11:15...
You just want us to come back on Wednesday,
guys. Right, that's it. I want to keep you in suspense. Now, in order to try to make some progress here, we're going to take a look at Masechta Bava Kamma. The Mishnah opens up Masechta Bava Kamma by counting Arba Avos Nezikin. So there are, the magic number here is four. There are four, shall we say, classic cases or archetypes or categories of damages. And each category has to be understood on its own. One is shar, one is bar, one is mave, and one is hever. Now, in cases 1, 2, and 4, I can tell you exactly what's going on. In case number 1, he was careless about watching his ox, and his ox went out and damaged. Case number 2, he dug a pit in a public area, somebody got damaged. Case number 4, he lit a fire, and the wind carried the fire and destroyed someone's haystack. He's responsible. Mave is a little bit confusing. We're not going to spend too much time on Mave, but we're going to mention one opinion in what Mave is, because that's the only opinion that's relevant for us today. And that is Mave Zeha Adam. Mave means when a person damages someone. That's called Adam HaMazik. So whereas all the other cases are Maman HaMazik, my object, either I own it, like in the case of Shar, or I created it in the case of Bar, or I lit the fire, which means I created a damage in the case of Hever. Those are all cases where there's an intermediary. There's something that causes the damage. It's the animal, it's the Bar, it's the fire. Mave means where I bang your table and break it, you know, with my hands. That's called Adam HaMazik. Now Rashi, on the third line, says Kiseder Sheksuvim BeParsha Sidron BeMishnah. Rashi is trying to answer the question: why does the Mishnah organize it in that particular sequence, starting with Shar, etc.? So Rashi's answer is Kiseder Sheksuvim BeParsha. The Mishnah is reflecting the order in which they were written in the Parsha. Now I have the Parsha in front of me. And I want you to look at the Mishnah as I read off the titles, so to speak, the subject of the Torah, and tell me what we have.
Shema, right?
Okay, in Shmot Chafal. First we have Kiigach Ish, Kiigach Shar Es Ish, O Es Isha. So the first thing in the Torah is Shar. So far so good. Then the Torah picks up Bar. The very next case is Kiiftach Ish Bar. He digs a bar. And after that, this happens to be in Pasuk Dalet in the next chapter, it says, Ki yave ish sode, meaning he burns a fire. What's missing here? What's missing here is Mave in our Mishnah, which is Adam HaMazik. So this is the subject of Tosis' kasha here, his objection to Rashi in the second Tosis in Bava Kama, Dibra Maskil Hashor. And if you fast forward approximately 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines down from the top of that Tosis, Lamandi Omar, according to one opinion, Maveze Adam, the word Mav is a reference to man. Now we have a problem. Afal Gavdu Lebosar Havara, Ksiv Beparshas Emar, Make Behemi Shalmena. The Torah addresses the case of Adam Amazik not in Mishpatim, in the book of Shmos, but rather in Parshas Emor, at the very end of Parshas Emor, in the book of Vayikra, way later on. Now, in our Mishnah, Maveh is wedged between Bar and Hever, between Bar and fire. And then we put Maveh in, which is referring, according to this opinion, to Adam HaMazik. Adam HaMazik is way later on. It should have been listed as number 4 in the Mishnah. Not as number 3, but as number 4. Hever, which is Eish, that should have been listed as number 3. And Mava, which is Adam, should have been listed, according to Rashi, as number 4. So in order to appreciate Rabbi Netanya's answer to defend his grandfather, let's take a look in the parasha. So I'm going to tell you what I skipped when I read before the parasha. We started with Shar, we went to Bar, and then I fast-forwarded to Eish. But in the middle, there's another case. Ki yignov ish, when a person steals. So Rabbi Netanya says that the shame Adam ksiv beparsha kodem, that Adam is mentioned in the parsha before Hever, before Eish, quote, ki yignov ish shor, vu echad mi avos nezikin dektoni lo bebraisa begemara. So there's a lot here in this Rabbeinu Tam. Right now I'll start with the first level, the first strata of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that Rashi is justified as explaining why the Mishnah has Mave as number 3 before Hever, because Gneva, when a man steals something, that's mentioned in the Parsha before Eish. And Mave is Adam. In other words, who steals something in the Parsha? It's man who steals something. So although technically the Mavin Amishnah is a case where a man destroys someone else's property, but nevertheless stealing someone's property is in effect like destroying his property. I take it away from him. So therefore the Mishnah is justified in mentioning Mavin where a man destroys property before Hever, because before the Torah mentions Eish, it mentions Ganov, a person who steals something, and it's as if he had destroyed the possession of the property of his friend. Now, let's fast forward for a moment to Daf Dalet Amud Beis, and we'll come back to Rabbeinu Tam in just a moment. On Daf Dalet Amud Beis, we have a different count of the Avos Mazikin, Avos Nezikin. We have one count in a brice in the name of Rav Oshia, and he comes up with the number 13. That means he adds 9 to the 4 in the Mishnah. And then we have the count of Rabbi Chia, who adds 11 to the count of Rav Oshia. So he accepts Rav Oshia, which is 13, adds another 11 to jack it up to 24. And the entire sugya here on Daf Dalet Amud Beis goes through all the cases that Rav Oshia adds, which means the 9 cases that he adds, all the cases that Rav Chia adds to Rav Oshia, that means on top of 13, he's going to get another 11 cases to jack it up to 24, then each one of the cases. First, the Gemara wants to know why the Mishnah has only 4 cases. Rav Oshia adds another 9 cases. And the Gemara tries to distinguish between Nizke Mamon and Nizke Gufo, which means that our mission is limited to a discussion of destroying someone's property, whereas Rav Oshia is going to add cases like Nezik Tzar, Ripu, Shevis, and Boshes, where you destroy someone's body, so you assault and injure his body. Okay, we're not going to go through all that, but suffice it to say the mission is more limited, and it only refers to these 4 categories. Rav Oshia is going to add another 9 categories, and he's going to expand the number to 13. Nine plus four.
Aren't they just subcategories? Because an ox, all of them could damage either a person or property.
Well, for this we have to know a little bit more about what's called chovel. Okay, there are two types of injuries that you could cause your friend in terms of his body. Mm-hmm. One is where your animal gores his body and he gets injured.
Right.
That's called nezek. And then there's a case where you wound a person. That's called chovel b'chaveru. And chovel b'chaveru engenders five categories of payment that don't apply to the case of shor.
No, but I'm saying the shor itself, the shor could gorge an animal, another shor, right? In which case it's property. Or the gore could the shor could gore the person.
So in that case, you only pay nezek. In a case where a human being assaults another human being, you pay five categories, which are unique categories. It's called nezek, tzar, ripui, shebis, and
doshes. That's the third category, because that's the person, that's man.
That's man. And that, again, I'm just pointing out that the Gemara is going to work overtime, try to figure out why the Mishnah stopped at the number four, okay. Whereas Rav Oshia added another 11 cases.
Okay.
I'm sorry, another nine cases to jack up the number two.
13.
To 13. So amongst those cases, which is not listed in the Mishnah, is where one human being injures another human being. That's called chovel. Okay. Now, Rabbi Chia is going to stand on the shoulders of Rav Oshia, meaning starting with the number 13, which again was 9 plus 4, but 13. And he's going to add another 11 to get to the number 24. And once again, the Gemara is going to list those extra 11 of Rav Chia and ask the question why Rav Oshia didn't have those extra 11. Why did he stop at the number 13 and not jack it up to 24? Now, on the list of Rav Chia, meaning his additional 11 cases to the 13 of Rav Oshia, he has Gana v'Gazlan. And this, if you want to see it inside, that's up to you. You can count up from the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Beis, counting up from the bottom 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So if you count up 9 lines before the end, you'll see the first two words are Ganav and Gazlan. These are two out of the 11 cases that Rav Chia adds to Rav Oshia. So the Gemara says, and this is about 7 lines up from the bottom of the page, Rav Oshia my time alo tani hani. Why didn't Rav Oshia add these 11 cases? So the Gemara says one answer, but that answer doesn't suffice for Gana v'Gazlan. Okay, so the Gemara now is focused on the question, why did Rav Oshia omit Gana v'Gazlan? So the Gemara answers, Haktani le. He does have Gana v'Gazlan. Because if you go up early in the page and you look at the list of 9 categories that he adds to the 4 in the Mishnah, he's got Shomer Chinam and Shomer and Shoel. So Rashi now wants to understand, how is it that Gana v'Gazlan is included in Rav Oshia's enumeration when Rav Oshia doesn't mention the words Gana v'Gazlan, all he mentions is Shomer Chinam and Shoel. So Rashi answers, 4 lines up from the bottom of the page, Tani le shomer chino v'shoel, the hasam nami shayach geneva. Even in the case of a shomer, you could have a theft. Kigon, Rashi's case is the following, Sheta'an shenignav heimenu. If the shomer, when the mafkid demands return of his object, he counter argues that it was stolen. Varehi biyado, and then we have testimony to the effect that he has it. No, he stashed it away in his vault up in the attic. Is Avrina beperek meruba? The Gemara says later on of Avakama, to toein tainas ganov kiganov. V'toein tainas gazlon kigazlon. So Rashi points out that within the context of a shomer, you could have a ganav. A shomer himself could be a ganav. Therefore, Rav Oshia didn't feel compelled to add ganav a gazlan to enhance or expand the list of avos, because they are implicit in the case of shomer chinam. Because the shomer chinam is also a ganav in the following case. And that's the case of Toed, Tainas, Ganov, Bipi, Kodol. Then the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Chia Nami Hotoni Le Shomer Chinam Vashoel. Rabbi Chia, since he's built on, standing on the shoulders of Rav Oshia, he also has Shomer Chinam and Shoel in his list. So why does he expand his list to include Ganav Agazlan if Ganav Agazlan are implicit in Shomer Chinam? And the Gemara answers, Tani Mamona is the Asal Yodei Behetera, Uketani Mamona the Asal Yodei Beisura. Rabbi Chia feels that Shomer Chinam, insofar as he's a Ganav, and Ganav are two fundamentally different situations, scenarios. And they differentiate in the following way. In the case of a shomer, how did he get possession of this horse that he wants to steal? It was given to him by the mafkid. The mafkid said, take my horse and please guard it for me. So the object was deposited in the hands of the shomer. The shomer had legitimate rights to the object in his possession. He didn't have rights to use the object. He didn't have rights to deny that he took it. But then we have the case of a ganav. A ganav, he sticks his hand into your pocket, he pickpockets you. That's called asi liyodei beisura. Now, what's the fundamental difference here between asi liyodei beheteira and asi liyodei beisura? So one could say the following, that although there is a case of a shomer who is a ganov, as Rashi said before, he was a toin tainus ganov, but he's not really a full-fledged ganov. He never really stuck his hand into someone's pocket and stole his possessions. That's called osilio de behetero. In such a case, when he becomes a ganov or a gazlan, toin tainus ganov, toin tainus gazlan, then he becomes responsible as a ganov and as a gazlan. But he doesn't have exactly the same status as a ganav gazla. Why? Because he never really stole it. If stealing means absconding with someone's object, in the case of a shomer, he never did so. He never actively, deliberately took something out of the possession of its owner, bringing it in, as it were, to his possession. That's a classic ganav, but he's not a classic ganav. It's asal yodei behetero. So imagine the following case. The shomer comes into Beis Din and he denies that he's holding on to the object. He says it was stolen. So he puts forth a tainas ganav. Well, he's going to be responsible henceforth, but he's not a real ganav. He didn't take it out of the possession of the nignav. He was given possession over the object. That's called osi liyode behetera. It came into his possession behet. Now, let's go back to Rabbeinu Tam for a moment. Rabbeinu Tam says that Shem Adam Kasuv Beparsha, right, that you'll see four lines up before the end of Tosfos Dimaskil Vashor. And why is Maveh mentioned in our Mishnah, wedged, as it were, between Bar and Hever, because Maveh is mentioned earlier than Hever. Where does it say Maveh, meaning Adam, earlier in this parsha? And that's the case of a ganav. Now let's begin to understand. The Maveh is first in the parsha because it refers to Adam, correct? Well, what kind of an Adam? We're talking about not Odom HaMazik, but we're talking about Odom HaGonev. He's a Ganov. So does that mean that our Mishnah mentions Ganov? Again, if the word Maver is a reflection of what's third in this parsha, and that's why it's third in our Mishnah, namely, Ki Ignov Ish Shar Oseh Utvacho, correct? So then, Ganov is the third case that's mentioned in our Mishnah. But that's very odd, because Rav Chia says that in addition to the four categories mentioned in our Mishnah, there are another 20 categories that jacks up the number to 24. And amongst them are Ganov and Gazlan. So by definition, it must mean that Ganov and Gazlan are not mentioned in our Mishnah. They were omitted. And that's where Rav Chia comes to jack it up by adding 20 plus 4 is 24. Amongst them he adds Ganav and Gazlan. Well, what do you mean Ganav and Gazlan? Ganav and Gazlan are mentioned in that Mishnah under Maver. So this question on Rabbeinu Tam is raised by the Rashba. The Rashba is quoted by the Shita Mekubetzes. I mean, you don't have to know that, but I'm just mentioning it in passing. Now, I gave you out some pages, if you would like to open them up. If not, I'll just read it to you and summarize it by heart. And we're looking on page Gimel. Now, the last word on page Beis is B'chidushei HaRashba. So we know now that we're talking about Rabbeinu Shlomo ben Aderes. He was a Spaniard. Because there's another Rashba who's one of the Bali Tosfos, you know, from the Ashkenazic school. But this is the Chidushei HaRashba. Now we're on the top of Daf Gimel. Heir, meaning he raises the following objection on Rabbeinu Tam. If Maved Dektoni, if the word Maved HaMishnah, Hainu Ganov, because that's the case in the Torah, which comes right before Eish, after Bar, in Kain Chasol Leila Minyana de Rav Chia. Chada, we're minus one in the counting of Rav Chia. De Rav Chia, Tani Achadasar, he added 11 to the 13 of Rav Oshio. Bechlolan on that list was Ganav and Gazlan. These are two of the 11 that he added to the 13 of Rav Chia. Uminole Tlesar. Not only that, I can ask you another question. How do we get the 13 of Rav Chia? I'm sorry, scratch that. Umana Nami Tlesa de Rav Oshia. He counts the 13 of Rav Oshia, and then he adds another 11 to those 13. He adds Ganav and Gazlan in order to havilate to arrive at the number of 24. If the four in our mission include Mava, which is a Ganav, Hechi Monale Rav Chia Tre Zimni. How is it possible that Rav Chia would count Ganav twice? He counts it once as Maver and a second time as Ganav, because that's one of the 11 categories that he adds to the 13 categories of Rav Oshia. Does everybody have that question? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me go over it one more time for myself. Just the mathematics is very interesting here. You cannot add to the Mishnah cases that are already written in the Mishnah. And if Rav Chia is adding Ganav to the four cases of our Mishnah, it must be that Ganav is not mentioned in the Mishnah. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, Ganav is in fact mentioned in the Mishnah. Why? Because Mave, which is number three on the list of the four, is Ganav.
But this all assumes Rashi. Right? Right. It all assumes that Rashi is correct, that the order is in the order of
the parashah. Correct. Yeah. So the Rashba wants to know if Rabbeinu Tam is defending Rashi and the order of the four avos is parallel, it mirrors the order of the Torah itself, and Mavid, therefore, since it's Ganav, it does reflect the order of the Torah. Well, then Mav equals Ganav, and if Mav equals Ganav, how does Rav Chia add Ganav to our Mishnah?
Maybe he doesn't agree with Rashi.
Okay, but how is Rashi going to learn Rav Chia? You know, Rashi can't argue with Rav Chia. Rav Chia was 1,100 years before Rashi. I don't know, I'm exaggerating, but let's say, 800 years before.
So you say Rashi has to justify what he said.
How could Rashi, the way Rabbeinu Tam explains Rashi, say that Mava is Ganav, that's why it's here before Eish, because of the Torah it's before Eish, when Ganav is one of the cases that Rav Chiya adds to Av Mishnah? Okay. Why would he add to Av Mishnah if it's already in Av Mishnah?
Yeah.
All right. Now, in order to try to answer this question of the Rashba on Rabbeinu Tam, what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to break down the category of Ganav into two categories. There's Ganav A and Ganav B. I don't mean Mr. A and Mr. B, but I mean two different conceptually different categories of Ganav with an afkamina between them. So the word Ganav might be one thing in our Mishnah when it's called a Mave, and the word Ganav might be something else when Reb Chiya lists it on as one of the Ovas HaNezik. So what I'm going to ask you to do now is turn back to page Beis, a paragraph that starts, if I would tell you Vehine, you'd say there are four such candidates. So I'm going to say Vehine Bechidushe Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi, which is the next to the last paragraph on page Beis. Now, Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi, as you know, is a sefer on the Rambam. It's one of the most, if not the most profound sforim in all of modern literature, halachic literature. It's very profound. My Rebbe used to quote his grandfather very often, but never from the sefer itself. I don't know if he went through the sefer, I'm sure he did, but I remember one person raised his hand in the class and he mentioned Reb Chaim, and he said Reb Chaim holds like this. So Reb Soloveitchik asked him, how do you know that? He says, well, it's in the sefer. So the Reb said to him, what, you read the sefer? Like, to him it was like a pella, because all the Torah that he knows from Reb Chaim was verbal, and he was passing on the Torah that he got mostly from his father named Reb Chaim. Some he heard from Reb Chaim himself. But so it's a little bit rare for me personally to learn a shtickel in Reb Chaim in the sefer. I actually have a first edition of Reb Chaim, because Reb Chaim lived in a city called Brisk, and Brisk didn't really have much of a publishing. There was some Hebrew publishing, but one of the rare svarim that was published in Brisk was Reb Chaim. So I have a cool edition of Reb Chaim where it says Brisk in the original. Reb Chaim is going to break down the concept of Gneva and Gzela into two different branches. You know, if you have a flow chart, you're going to take Gneva and Gzela as your title, and then you're going to divide it up into two. Now, the first category of Gneva is what he calls Etzem HaGneva, if you could underline those words, Al Yidei, towards the end of that line, this is line 3, Kinyone HaGzela. So maybe you can underline those words. That's category number one. And what we're talking about here is gneva on the object itself. And the reason why the ganav or the gazon is chayav for the object itself is because he, the ganav or the gazon, made a kinyan on the object. This is a very unique halachic concept, that Reuven could stick his hands into Shimon's pocket and actually make a kinyan, meaning acquire ownership, on Shimon's pocketbook, on his wallet. You know what I'm saying? Only the Torah has such a concept. It's called kinyone gzela. And we're going to see soon that kinyone gzela have tremendous repercussions. Now there's another category of gzela, and that is simply a maisa gzela. He did not make a kinyan, but he implemented something called a maisa gzela. There's an act of gzela. There's no kinyan. And as a result of this maisa gzela, the Torah says he's chayav, he has to pay, as a mazik. Mazik means, since he did a maisa gzela, he took away the object from somebody else, he caused them a loss. He's a mazik. He's like someone who destroyed someone else's property. Again, in this case, the ganav is chayav for the abstract value, not for the gzela atzma. And not only that, he doesn't have any kinyonim on the object. Okay. Now let's ask the following question. First, I'm going to start with a very simple question, and then I'm going to continue by upgrading it to a more sophisticated question. In order to implement a Kenyan Gzela, what do you need? What's the basic requirement, if you would call it that, in order to talk about Kenyan Gzela, any Kenyan? You need an action. You have to somehow take the object. The word kinyan doesn't only mean lifting, although lifting is a great example, but any act in which you take the object, that's called kinyan. Right? You can lift it, you might be able to drag it, you might be able to even push it and relocate it. Many different actions, all of which symbolically reflect acquisition. I acquire something by doing an action in the object, by taking the object, by possessing the object. That's kinyonim. So that in the case of a ganav, from the first perspective of Reb Chaim, as kinyonik zela, the ganav or the gazan would have to do some action in the object. He's got to take the object. Otherwise, this category of ganav is impossible. You can't talk about kinyonik zela if there was no act of taking the object.
As opposed to maisa, where you're just doing some action but not necessarily related to
Correct, but it doesn't relate to the object per se. The object remains exactly where it was. So take, for example, if Yudon would give me a cow, to watch, and I'm watching your cow, it's in the corral. Then, when it comes to time to return it, I deny that I ever got this cow. Well, you might say that in such a case, I'm a ganav, but I'm not a ganav with kinyonik zelo. I never did anything to your cow. But let's take a case of shaleach yad b'pikadon, where I take your cow and I thresh the floor of my field with your cow. In that case, I took your cow. That's kinyonik zela. So again, just mentioning Rashi again at the beginning of Sanhedrin, Rashi combines A plus B. When Rashi wants to talk about a shomer who's a gazlan, he says that he did two things. He was kofer b'pikadon, and he was shaleach yad b'pikadon. Now, a question, our objection on Rashi was, why does he need A plus B? Either one should have been sufficient. We know that a kofer b'pikadon is considered a gazlan. That's a gemara of Rav Sheshes. And then we know that a shaleach yad is considered a gazlan. But let's begin to understand that even though each one on its own, meaning each one independently, whether it's kofer b'pikadon, whether it's Sholech Yad B'Pikon is enough to make him into a Ganov, there's a fundamental difference between these two cases. In the first case, he doesn't have Kinyonik Zela. He never acquired the object for himself. He made a false claim in Bezdin in which he says, it's mine, I never got it from you. So in that sense, the Torah considers that as a Maisig Zela, as if I took it from you. But it's not a Kenyan. You can't say it's a Kenyan because he never took the object. The object was always there, and that's where it remains. Mashen Ken, in the second case of Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon, there, he in effect took the object for himself. What is the greatest manifestation or let's say most profound expression of taking something? It's using it. If I use the object, I ride the horse, that's considered a kinyan gzeila.
So if I just take the cow and put it in a separate pasture, but I haven't used it, is that still a kinyan? Because I've taken it.
Yeah, that would probably be a kinyan because you took it from one rishus to another.
Okay.
You see, we get into other issues here which I didn't want to touch on. That's called Yad Shomer Ki Yad Balabais. Meaning, if the Shomer deposits something in the hands of the Shomer, that area, that location is considered, it considers this the rishus of the Mafkid, as if it's still in his rishus. If the shomer removes it from that rishus and he locks it up in his vault, that would be that would be a Kenyan gzeil because he took it out of the Rishusim. But now we're talking just about a taina, a claim in Beis Din where the Shomer put forth a false claim. Let's say he says, I never got it from you, it was stolen from me. He falsifies the truth. And that, the Torah says, is like Gneva, but it's not the Gneva of the first category of Reb Chaim, the Gneva of Kinyonic Zeil, because he never actually took it. In contrast, we have Sholeach Yad B'Fikon, there he took the object.
So this is typical Brisker Sfeidinim, where it's the object, what's it get? Kavua versus, I forget the other term.
Kavua?
No.
I didn't hear what
the person versus the object.
Yeah, it could be Gavra versus Hefta. Like, right, for example, in a case of a Taina where a person puts forth a false claim, he fabricates the truth, that could be considered a Maisa Gavra, but he never took the Hefta. And if you want to jack up the Gneva to a higher category, right, of Kinyonig Zelo, where he actually acquires ownership for that, we would need not just a taina, but we would need an act in which you took it out of the possession of the mafkin and brought it into your possession. You would have to demonstrate your ownership with an act of taking the object. So if you take a look again, I'm going to read to you a little bit of the language inside. We're in the paragraph, V'hine b'chidushei Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi. And we're fast-forwarding till almost the end of the paragraph, but let's say from the end of the paragraph up about seven lines. The first word in the line is disavid. You see, lefi amavuar, nired, v'shlichus yad, yesh lo kinyone gzela b'chefetz. Why? Because he actually absconded with the object. He took the object and he rode the horse. You know, he's like Paul Revere. He's riding the horse. Ha'chefetz ha'gozel. Oh, in such a case, chayav b'hashova al habe'en. Okay, we'll have to come back to this phrase. Let's just underline it for a moment. Chayav b'hashova al habe'en means that on the object itself, he has a kinyan. But in contrast, I will kofer b'pikadon ein lo kinyonig zeila b'chefetz agosel. He never actually acquired ownership on the object. The eno chayav b'hashava al habe'en. Okay, that's in contrast to the first category, which is chayav b'hashava al habe'en. Kol chiyuvo b'kofer b'pikadon u'mishum ha'maisek zeil disavid b'hu v'atorah asasol l'kof b'kod l'din mazik al ha'chefetz li'inyan she'im nenas chayav b'onsin. Okay, now we'll try to see in the few moments that we have left if we can embellish this and understand what he means by chayav b'shoval be'en in the case where he has kinyon igzela, as opposed, in contrast to eino chayav b'shoval be'en, where he has no kinyon igzela. In the case of mazik, he doesn't acquire ownership on the object. He has to pay its value. That's not called a chiyuv hashava on the be'en. In other words, he's not replacing the original lost object. He has no relationship to the original lost object. He destroyed it. He has to pay its value. He caused the owner of the object a loss. Let's say his bank account went down from 100 to 80. Pay him the 20. But in the case where the Gazlan effectuated a kinyan, then his payment will only be a replacement for the object. His fundamental obligation now is to bring back the object. Why? Because he made a kinyan on the object.
You just said you're paying the keren.
Well, again, you pay the keren, but the keren is being paid as a replacement for the object. It's a whole new concept. It's not, I'm paying the keren because I caused you a loss of 20. I'm paying you the 20 so that you could buy the object and replace it, so to speak. It's a replacement of the object. So now I want you to turn back to the paragraph we started with on page Gimel. And fast forward to line 5. Ulam, lefima shekasav marona grachzal, de vigneva ugzeli yeshne dine chiyuv, that Gneva Gzeil is subdivided into two categories. Chada number one is Chiyuv HaShavas Etzem HaGzeila. Right, Etzem HaGzeila means you made a kinyan on it, and therefore you have to replace the object, because once you acquire the ownership of the object, you have to give that object back to its owner. And that's what he calls Chiyuv HaShavas Etzem HaGzeila Sheba Al Yidei Kinyon HaGzeila. V'shein is another category of Gzeila, Al Mais HaGzeila B'lechud, even though you didn't take away the object. Gam Kei Mischayim V'Tashlum, and you have to pay for the object as a mazik. The Torah considers you a mazik. Is Hecha She'eno Be'en Yischayim V'Tashlum Mishum Mais HaGzeila Dis Avid Behu. If the object was destroyed, he has to pay as a mazik would pay because of his chiyuv tashlumin. Again, it's not a chiyuv to replace the object, it's a monetary chiyuv as a mazik. Is nira, maybe now we can swing back to Rabbeinu Tam. Da mishna mona odom mazik kodem hever. Why does mava appear in that mishna before hever? Mishum dat mipnei da Torah osasol ganov mazik al chayfetz mitzad maisik zela. This entire parasha in Mishpatim that starts with Shor, then goes to Bar, and then goes to Ganov, and then ends with Eish, with Mave. It's all about one concept, and that's Mazik. I've destroyed your chefetz, I've caused you a monetary loss, I have to pay you out of pocket to compensate you for your monetary loss. The Ganov here, in this context, in this parasha, is a Mazik. He didn't make any kinyonim. He was kofer b'pikadon, or he claimed that it was stolen. And in such a case, he pays as a mazik, because his act of claiming that it was lost or denying that he ever got it, that itself is considered a maisik zeil without a kinyan zeil. Ulam Rabbi Chia, when Rabbi Chia adds ganav and gazlan, he's not repeating what we know from our Mishnah. He's talking about a chiyuv hashavas etzem hagzeila. In other words, a chiyuv that relates to the cheft itself, the object itself. Why? Because he made a kinyan, he acquired ownership on the object. Oh, in that case, that's what Rav Chia wants to add, and that's a whole different type, a whole different category of a chiyuv of gazlan, where he pays for the etzem hagzeila. And why? Because he made a kinyan gzeila. So Rav Olsai, just to summarize, we're using Rabbeinu Chaim HaLevi and these, you know, the two subcategories of ganov and gazlan to justify Rabbeinu Tam. How is it that mave is added in the list because the Torah talks about a ganov, so it's landed to the list of the four avos nezikin? Yet Rav Chia, when his calculation of 24 avos nezikin, he repeats ganov and gazlan. How could it be? The answer is it's not a repetition. The mave of our Mishnah, which is the ganov of Parshas Mishpatim, is not the same ganov of classic gneva, of the extreme kind of gneva, the full-fledged gneva of Rabbi Chia. The gneva in the Torah, Yignov Ish, Shar Oset, etc., etc., that's not a full-blown gneva. That's a gneva through a tainas hashomer, whether he's kofer b'pikadon or he says it was stolen and it wasn't stolen. There was never a kinyan gzela, so he's chayav b'taras mazik. He's chayav because he caused his friend a loss. Hence, ganav belongs to this parasha. Rav Chia, on the other hand, repeats ganav, but it's not a repetition. He wants to add this new category of ganav, and this is the ganav who made a kinyan on the object. Like, for example, sholeach yad b'pikadon. That gives him the din of kinyanei gzeila with many repercussions. And in the next paragraph, which we don't have time for right now, but Blinetta will pick it up if you're here on Wednesday, he's going to use this distinction of Reb Chaim, these two categories, to come back and explain Rashi, why Rashi feels that we have to have both kofer b'pikadon and sholeach yad b'pikadon.